Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
The great Willie T. Ribbs joins us in the first show to tell all sorts of great stories. You know him from my doc, Uppity. Well, the story of his life. And we get into lots of good fun with Willie T. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Hackers called Shiny Hunters, it's a group called Shiny Hunters, have breached over 73 million user records from dating apps, delivery services, online stores, and newspapers, and they're selling the info on the dark web. Don't let this happen to you, people. You need to protect yourself. It's 2020. You're online all the time. It's convenient. You're buying everything. You're signing up for this. You're doing that. You're paying for this and that. You need to protect yourself. LifeLock is the leader in identity theft protection. They detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No, prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock and see throughout your members on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
The Adam Carolla Show is going on the road. Next stop, Nashville, Tennessee. Clay Travis is joining me on Friday, and Podcast One's Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine is going to be joining me as well for a Saturday show. And we're doing a special live stream. If you want to watch the pod and be part of the action, check out livexlive.com and get the Live by Live app. It's all happening this weekend, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. My Houston show had over 1 million views, and I'd be stoked if this one could surpass that number so we can do that with you. So it's going to be a great show. Make sure you tune in this Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. Check out livexlive.com or download the Live by Live app.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Willie T. Ribbs and Brad Williams. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, peaceful podcaster, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The choice. We got a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for hitting that little share button on your phone. I can see it when the ratings go up, so thanks in advance to that. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
You're at your in-laws' house?
I'm at my in-laws' house, yeah. And our power went out right as we were going to bed last night. It was a huge, so it wasn't just the power going out. It was very windy in LA, right? And so as we're like getting ready for bed, there's a huge bang, like this big pop. And all of a sudden the lights go out and everything goes out. I was in the dining room walking to the bedroom. Christy was already in the bedroom and she could see outside the back window, which is where our bedroom is, the big explosion, like a transformer, like exploded, right? Like up on the pole. And then over the next 10, 15 minutes, it happened like four or five more times at other poles around our house. It was crazy. So I don't know electricity that well. I mean, electrical that well, but like several transformers either exploded or something, or showering sparks down on everyone, and the whole block, the whole neighborhood was out, and we're still without power.
Well, I blame either Black Lives Matters or Trump. That's my take. That's my
new. You covered everything.
That's enough blame to go around.
That's my new world order. All right, Willie T. is going to, Willie T. Ribbs, one person we did the doc on, Uppity, is going to be joining us soon. Give me the names on the GoFundMes, would you please, Max Zapata? Thank you. I had an interesting thought. Willie T. is mentoring the Kyle Larson, the guy who dropped the N-bomb on the E-race.
Wow.
Yeah. Funny in a sense that we talk about winners of the COVID-19. That guy's definitely a loser because he would have been in a car talking to his team, not on the internet doing a virtual version of a race where we could capture an N-bomb being dropped. But in these times, these troubling times, Willie T is going to help bring it all together. So I had a thought. I was thinking about our friend Billy Yang in the St. Regis Save the St. Regis GoFundMe liquor store. And I thought, last we spoke, he was at about 30, 32,000. Now they're 36,500. And I thought, oh, that's promising. Yeah. And then I started thinking to myself, wait a minute. Speaking of GoFundMe, before all this shit went down, didn't Larry David start one for the Riviera Caddies Fund?
For the golf course, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Think about the optics of Riviera. We need, in this day and age of all the small black-owned and minority-owned businesses being burnt to the ground and Black Lives Matter and everything else, this is a GoFundMe page for caddies at one of the most exclusive country clubs in the United States, called the Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
Well-intentioned, but doesn't look great.
They have raised, well, especially if some asshole of the podcast brings it up. Now, look, I'm making a joke, obviously, because you can't be blamed for shit when then shit happens after you did the shit. Right. You know what I mean? Like, you write a book or you make a movie or you make a TV show and then shit happens 6 months later. That's not on you.
Right.
But I still made fun of it at the time because
Well, I remember your angle, which was, I think, spot on when, you know, everyone's like, yay, Larry David making this GoFundMe and, you know, donating $500 of his own money. And this guy did $500. This guy, and you're like, he couldn't just take care of it and move on.
Well, the average, I don't know what the over under is on the average income of a person who belongs to the Riviera Country Club. But you don't have a lot of those guys making $450,000 a year. You have many more of them making, you know, 28 point something or 50 point. I mean, those are some of the richest individuals on the planet. Those country clubs are hundreds of thousands of dollars to join. Anyway, just so you know, all's right in the universe. Poor Billy Yang and his family-owned liquor store, after his dad was basically executed by robbers there in 04, it's up to 36,000. Riviera Caddy Fund is $158,000.
Oh, nice.
Well, you know what? Pound for pound by donators, that's probably about equal.
Yeah.
So there you go. The goal was 150.
They exceeded their goal.
Oh, how nice. Good for them.
So all is right in the universe. All right.
Oh, boy.
That's just something that had been roiling around in my head for like 2 weeks. I've just been thinking, I wonder how's that work with the fund? Let's see. Willie's calling up in a few minutes.
What's the latest with the Willie story? He was in various stages of development over the last couple of years.
The story with Willie is best I know at the time you're hearing this is they had, so in the series department, it was going to Showtime because Brian Koppelman and his partner wanted to develop it for their next piece after Billions. Billions is going to run its course at some point sooner than later, and they're going to move on to their next project, and they wanted to do Willie's story as a episodic, you know, weekly, right, like
limited
Billions
series or something. All right.
Yeah, I don't know if it's limited. I think they just want to do it as a series, which would be super cool. Oh, Willie's on hold. All right, we'll bring Willie in. Willie's in outside Austin, I think, but not far out of Austin. Is he on, Max Sapata?
Yeah, he's just activating all the cameras.
Oh, okay. So that's. We're trying to get the deal done with Showtime, and then there's Mahershala Ali's company, and then there's the other Titan or whatever that one is. I can't think of the name of it that does Wonder Woman and all those big movies, and they won some too.
Yeah.
Hey, Willie, can you hear me?
He's muted.
Just take your mute off.
You got me?
You got curly hair.
And how?
So, Willie, how are you faring with all this stuff that's going on in the last 20 minutes in this country?
Well, it was a matter of time, Adam. It was just a matter of time. It was at its tipping point. And it was with everything that's been going on over years, decades, years. And now I just think that it's time for a readjustment.
Where are you on police, abolishing police, educating police, retraining police? Where are you at on that subject?
Well, I think you've got to, as I said, you got to readjust the funding, especially for training. And, you know, there's got to be a relationship with the police and law enforcement that is. I wouldn't say warm and fuzzy, but respectful. You got to respect, and you can't have rogue racists in there or some trigger happy dumbass coming through the academy, and it eventually ends up the way it is now.
Well, you know, it was kind of funny. I was thinking about it. I had this joke I've said a lot, which is like, you think about pedophiles, you know, and then my joke would be, all right, which dad wants to take all the kids camping this weekend? And the first guy who raises his hand, you go, you're out. Right. I don't trust you because there's a good game. The Steelers are playing the Colts this weekend. You should want to watch that. I was kind of thinking that wanting to be a policeman almost means I don't want you to be a policeman. Just literally going, this is what I want to do. Like I always thought about, I never had a job out of high school. I was rudderless, but I went to go try to be a fireman. I didn't want to be a policeman because I didn't want to have that dominion over people. You know what I'm saying?
Well, one thing about it, the film Uppity, which you produced, which is a film for the for the ages, explains why I wanted to be a race driver, and I knew at 9 years old. And a lot of people, you know, I don't know if I would want to be in the career of authority.
No, not in this day and age. First off, everyone has a phone in their camera and they're just filming you and every interaction you ever have with another human being. And
it used to be a home sex films.
Oh God.
Now it's not that.
Salad days.
I know.
Yeah, no more home sex films. It's filming police.
I had to explain to my kids about the salad days back in when we were a pure nation, when we're more naive, and I could just sit around and watch Tommy Lee steer a houseboat with his cock. Now you turn on the news and there's fire everywhere.
You were so young and innocent then.
I know. Hey, Willie, I want to talk about you and your career and your past. And, making the doc with you was really one of the most rewarding things I've done in my career. But your stories of, you know, Muhammad Ali and then Bruce Jenner and all that. Tell us a couple Muhammad Ali stories that we might not know or that didn't make the cut.
One of them was I was in Vegas and he was there. It was for a fight and it was at the London Hilton. And I came up to his room. He was on the, he was up on the high, up in the suite. And his valet says, "Oh, Mr. The champ is in the bedroom. Go on in." And by then we had already had a great relationship, trusting, right? And so I walked in his room and he was in the bed with two women, one on each side. And I said, "Well, sorry, champ, I didn't mean it. This is what a champ's supposed to do. And when you become a champ, you're going to do this." I thought that was just classic. That was classic Ali. And then another time was in London when we were going through a crowd, and there was a theater in London that he visited in a borough called Brixton, which is predominantly Jamaican and Trinidadian. And we got out and we nearly got stampeded, right? And he looked at me and he says, "Man, they're more crazy than in the United States." And we literally got trampled, and everybody just wanted to touch Ali. It was incredible to be around him and the energy that he gave people, and energy that he just gave you being in his presence. And he made you feel like you were right on the same level with him. It was just fabulous.
You hanging around with Ali at the height of Ali's powers, and Cosby as well at the height of their powers. I don't know. We're looking at a picture of you and Ali from back in the day. Who was more popular than those two guys nationally or internationally back in those days? One thing I did want to talk to you about is fighting. Back when you would fight, speaking of Ali, when you'd fight in the pubs of London to make money, when you were there doing Formula Ford, I think, at the beginning, instead of going to college. Can you tell one of those stories or how that began?
Well, my parents gave me enough money to race. They sent me over there.
To England. Send you to England.
To England. Yeah, sent me to England. And I was, I had just enough money to race. And I kept thinking, well, what do I do to make extra money so I can eat? And a buddy of mine, we just happened to go to this pub. And in the center of the pub was roped off. And it wasn't a mat. It was a hard wooden floor. So if you got dropped, you were going to either get knocked out from the punch or you were going to get knocked out from hitting the floor. And we were watching these guys, these middle-aged guys get up and start drinking, and then they bet who's going to win. And there's a big betting pool going on. And so my buddy says to me, he says, "Why don't you get in there and did you ever put the gloves on?" I said, "Oh, yeah, back in the United States." He said, "Well, why don't you get in there and mix it up with those guys and maybe, see if we can win something." Well, I won about 100 pounds, right? And back then, I was that 100 pounds would take me through a full week.
Were they just sliding gloves? They're just taking old boxing gloves and swapping them out from one guy and putting them on the other guy?
Oh, they had holes in it, and the padding was falling out. They were old. Yeah, it was almost bare knuckles.
Right.
And, so it was, I had a lot of fun with that because the guys were drunk. Mm-hmm. I wasn't drunk. I only drank milk in those days. I didn't drink at all. Tea.
And were you able to come back on subsequent weekends and make more money, or did they catch on to you?
After about the fourth, I was going every other weekend, right? And about the fourth time I was there, they were like, "This Yank here is knocking us out and taking our money," so they slowed that down.
How long? I know I did the doc on you, but I don't know, what was your total period of time in London when you went there as a 18, 19-year-old to race in Formula 4? Were you there for a full 2 years?
2 years. I went in 77 the whole year. I came back to the United States in 78 and then went back again in 79.
And I just heard that Bubba Wallace, who African-American NASCAR, fainted after he was supposed to be on the show today. I think he fainted after a race yesterday in Atlanta. Do you know Bubba? Do you know anything about that story?
I heard about the story. I don't know him personally like I do Lewis Hamilton, but you know, I guess the fluid ran out, and you know, the car had more fluid in it than he did. But yeah, he apparently he got dehydrated to the point where he was having a hard time standing.
How's your son Theo doing, who's a world-class trap shooter?
Well, I mean, he shoots really actually sporting clay, but...
sporting clay, sorry.
He's doing real well. And, you know, funny, he opened up the season with two victories in February, one in Florida and one in Georgia. He never opens up the season winning. He usually, halfway through the season down the end, is when he starts coming on. And... soon as he opens up with two wins, we get shut down. But, you know, he's out practicing. And, you know, we have a ranch, a facility that's 217 acres that we train, that he trains on. So I'll go out there and train with him and keep him sharp. So, you know, everything's starting to happen again because they shut, you know, auto racing down. They shut all sports down, including him. So, we'll, you know, he wants to take you out and put a shotgun in your shoulder, Corolla.
All right. Well, as long as it's not my mouth. I'd love to go shooting. I mean, I can shoot on your property, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can shoot. This is Texas. Okay? Texas. Right. We use our guns to eat our cornflakes with. You scoop it out.
Do you, you're a little outside of Austin, right? But you're sort of in between Circuit of the Americas, COTA and Austin.
Actually, I'm actually a little north of COTA. COTA is a little bit, southwest of me. And when I say a little bit, 35 minute drive. And in Texas, 35-minute drive is like a walk across the street.
How did you end up in Texas? Because you're California. You started out in California.
Well, I wanted to, you know, as you know, I grew up on a ranch. And when my career was over, I wanted to get back on a ranch again. But I wanted to, California was changing. And it was not changing the way I you know, it used to be fun. California in the 60s, 70s, 80s was just a fun place. And it was free for everything. There's nothing free there anymore. I mean, when I say free, you can't, you know, just law after law after law after tax after tax after tax. And that, the taxes didn't bother me. It was the laws that did. And especially with Theo starting his shooting career, I knew for him to be a world-class shooter, he had to be in Texas. And so I bought a ranch and in Dripping Springs, Texas, and set up a practice grid for him. And I just like it out here. I mean, the majority of the people are just fun people. And I'm in the country, and that's where I like to be.
Did Theo ever think about driving? Did he ever do any driving? It seems like weird to go from driving to shooting.
Well, honey, that was my hobby. I mean, Al Unser Jr. and Bob, they all like golf. Andretti, they all golfed. I didn't like golf. I mean, I grew up on a ranch and I started shooting as a kid, but golf was just too quiet. I got asked, funny, I got asked that same question by the BBC back in the day. He said, well, how come you don't get your groom your son to be in a race driver? I said, well, I said, it's changed now. It's a lot harder for, you don't see any Unsers in the sport anymore like the old days. You know, you got one Andretti. The hand-me-down is no longer in the sport because it's become so expensive. So, you know, I you know, we used to go out shooting, and Theo was little, and he pushed the buttons for me and for the targets to fly. And he wanted to start doing it, and right away, he got it's like golfing. It's like picking, like Tiger Woods picking up a golf club. Shooting is the same way. It's very technical, and he got it straight away. And I put him in some competitions. He started winning, and now he's one of the top shooters in the world.
I have a semi-difficult question to ask. I was interviewing Dan Gurney shortly before he passed, and I said, you want to talk about Willie T. Ribs? And he said, no. And I thought, why didn't you want to talk about Willie T. Ribs? And I know you raced for him. I know you had a lot of respect for him. I know you won for him. Did you guys have a dust-up at the end with him?
Never.
Did you leave on
Never.
Bad terms?
He was the best team owner I'd ever raced for. I love him to death. And Dan really stays away from what he might think might be controversial.
Mm.
Right. And, you know, because, you know, one, you know, how was Willie? How was he to work with? You know, was he, did you deem him controversial? Was he outspoken? Dan really, you know, Dan doesn't like to get into that. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people, will, Uncle Bobby will.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Unser. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in a heartbeat. And I talk to Uncle Bobby at least twice a week, at least two times a week. And he's getting on, you know, he's 86 years old now. And I don't ever want, I want to stay fresh with him right to the end.
So Dan, it was more about, I don't know, avoiding some controversy or being misconstrued in some way, shape, or form, rather than any kind of incident you had with him.
Oh, no. We had no, in fact, it was the best relationship I had had with any owner. And probably, you know, I had great, good relationship with some owners, but we had, it was an awesome experience. And it showed in the film.
John Singleton, sadly, I know you guys got together and were able to spend some time down at the marina, maybe on his boat. I can't recall, but you were telling him stories and starting to get the late, great John Singleton sort of downloaded on your life story in sort of phase one of this. And then he died some weeks later. Did you have any recollections of that?
Yeah, we met three times, once on his boat and two for two other times for dinner in Marina Del Rey. And he just wanted to brief me as to how he saw the series going, right? And this was a series that was to be produced by Brian Koppelman.
Right. Showtime.
And Showtime. And so he was giving me his ideas that he had with Koppelman. And, you know, with Koppelman doing billions, Koppelman's a Clydesdale.
Oh, yeah.
And so, oh, yeah. So those two together, they'd be a formidable combo. But I hear there's another guy in the works to team up with Koppelman that's a bad cat too.
Yeah, we were able to convince Ted Nugent to come aboard. So he's going to put his name on this baby, and we're going to sail right through all the executives at Showtime with Nugent's
several
name on.
Several trips out to the ranch in Michigan.
Not to mention clearable music, people, which is a big issue. He owns his entire catalog. Maybe Stranglehold we'll stay away from for now, but when we get to season three. Yeah, who? I don't know who the, are we allowed to say who the other person is? Because I don't know who that person is.
I heard it was Don Cheadle.
Oh yeah, Don Cheadle. That's right.
I heard it was Don Cheadle.
That's a name.
Yeah. And Cheadle is a brilliant actor, and he's directed before. I think to piggyback off your film, Adam, and for you to do what you did, Spike Lee, it was in front of Spike and some of the other big Negro producers. And yeah, I said that, big Negro. And, you're just going to have to like it. So, you know, for you to do that and no one else stepped up because I was available and you ran with the ball and not just run. If that's an Emmy. We have an Emmy. You have an Emmy on your hands.
I do.
And with a message. With a message. I mean, it's not the last kiss or the last dance or whatever. No one cries after the last dance, but they cry after they watch Uppity.
Well, thanks. And
ESPN cried after the last dance.
Yeah. I got to tell you guys, I loved The Last Dance. I look forward to it every weekend. And then they went right to Lance Armstrong, and I watched the shit out of Lance Armstrong. And then the other night, they went to Bruce Lee, and I kind of found myself looking at my phone a little bit. Like,
oh, really?
I love Bruce Lee, and I'm all in on any of these kind of docs, but it was, they slowed it down a bit, or whatever it was, it didn't pull me in. Like Jordan did and Lance Armstrong did.
Bruce Lee doc was a Sundance doc that they bought. So I don't know if it was made with the ESPN. Wasn't made with the ESPN.
That's been around a while.
Oh, that's an interesting.
I remember seeing it at, not seeing it, but seeing that it was at Sundance and then seeing, ESPN acquired it. So they got a sort of third party.
That's a very good point because I found myself. Look, in terms of subject matter, I'm not into bike racing per se. Martial arts is cool. I grew up with Bruce Lee posters, you know, all cool. So it wasn't the subject matter. It sort of, you know what you're saying? It's like Crave Jerky used to be a little boutique jerky, and I loved Crave Jerky. And then I had some a year ago, and it's like, it's a little drier. Maybe I got a bad batch. And then someone goes, Nestle bought Crave Jerky. Yep. And you're like, okay.
That checks out.
So I was all in on the doc Last Dance. I was all in on Lance Armstrong. And I was watching this one like it was 30 for 30 produced from the same crew. And I found myself like 20 minutes in kind of going, I'm not as in on this one as I was on the other ones. Maybe you just explained it, Bald Brian.
Could be a reason.
Willie T, when are you coming out to L.A. next?
When you call me.
All right.
The only time I come out to L.A. is when you say
Are you going to be at Indy? Are you going to be at Indy this year?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, can we go?
If they let us in, if they let me in, or let the general public and don't limit the amount of crew members and guests, then I'll be there.
Oh, good. Can we go from the hotel to the track together?
Like we did last time?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We did that. Didn't we do that a year or two ago?
Yeah. And
we went in the same car?
Yeah. Willie's a goddamn legend at Indy. So when you're trying to get in and there's traffic and cops and cones and barriers everywhere.
No. That's your all access pass.
That's like, it's like Beyonce's playing the Super Bowl halftime show and she's in the back seat of the rental and you're trying to get into the stadium. That's what it was like. Not that Beyonce's as hot as you, Willie, but that's what I was talking about. They say Penske says it will only run Indy 500 with fans. So, they'll push it. If August doesn't work, they'll push it to, October. Last question, Willie, what is the heat going to do to those cars and the tires and the compounds?
Remember the cartoon Gumby?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gumby, yeah, that's what it's all. Cooling shouldn't be too much of an issue. The drivers now are sort of in a closed cockpit.
I know. I just saw that.
Yeah, yeah, that new configuration. And I'm going to tell you what, as my dad used to say, it's going to be hotter than little sister in there.
I don't even want to go there. All right. Willie T, the documentary's uppity, and you can find that over at Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y. And get a DVD. It's got a bunch of bonus content on there. Get a signed poster or whatever you like, and it just helps. Hey, Willie, always good to talk to you, and I'm really hoping we're going to see you at the 500 this year, and we'll hang out.
We're going to do it. We'll party, too. St. Elmo's.
Yeah.
We'll go to St.
Well, I love it. Thanks, Willie. Appreciate
it, man.
Bye, babe. Take
Cheers.
Care.
Thanks, everyone.
Cheers.
Bye.
Good to see you.
All right. Let me hit cross rope. Oh, I was just hopping up and down with my cross rope a few minutes ago. Looking for ways to stay fit while spending time at home these days? Well, nobody can tell you about skipping rope like me. I've been doing this for years, and it's good. I'll tell you what's good about skipping the rope. As I always talk about, it teaches you rhythm and balance as well. You get a full body workout, just 30 minutes, combines high intensity cardio and full body strength training, because the cross rope is weighted. So, and I don't know if you guys have ever used a weighted jump rope, but this, you get 2 minutes into using a weighted one, all of a sudden you feel it in your arms and your back and your shoulders. It is not like the ones I formerly would use. I got a 60-day no-risk guarantee. They got an app that is free and anytime access for quick workouts, and you can travel with it. Throw it right in your bag. CrossRope, right, Dawson?
If you're ready for a new cardio and full-body home workout, visit CrossRope.com/Adam. Get up to $40 off CrossRope sets, plus free shipping when you check out today at CrossRope.com/Adam. That's A-D-A-M. That's CrossRope.com/Adam.
Love me some Willie T. All right.
He's so interesting to listen to. Yeah. I mean, what a great perspective. What a great sense of humor. What great stories.
Yeah. Very interesting guy. And you, I remember when we were making the documentary, it's like, Caitlyn Jenner's in this? And what about Cosby and Don King and Muhammad Ali? And it's like, yeah, man, put them all in. I mean, I would love to make this thing a series and have the actor who was playing the 29-year-old Bruce Jenner in this film. All right, we got some calls coming up. Brad Williams going to join us for second half show. Take a quick break. Be right back after this.
And now Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Palm Harbor, Florida. After an 8-hour standoff with police, a 51-year-old man was charged with shooting into an occupied dwelling. The man told officers he was in his yard shooting his rifle at rats. Definitely not a Jew.
All right, nice job. Do you record that here or at home?
No, I do that at home.
Your neighbors must be able to hear you.
That's why I built the studio. They can't hear me.
Okay.
Screaming, definitely not a Jew, right into the neighborhood.
You got dual glazed windows in that studio, right? Sound deadening. All right, let's see. Pete, 37 from Sacramento, has got a question, Pete, or a thought. Pete, go ahead.
I do have a thought. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Love you all.
Thank you.
So here's my idea. I think that there should be a black summit of prominent black leaders to discuss this race issue and sort of in this, I don't know, talk of systemic oppression or figure it all out, you know? I'm a white guy. I can't really tell people that, you know, the statistics don't bear out evidence of, cops killing black people more than white people. We need some prominent black people. Maybe get Barack Obama and Larry Elder and David Alan Greer in a room together and talk this out and put it on TV.
O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, the greats.
O.J. Simpson, that's a good one, yeah.
Well, I think there's a problem. Anyone who's ever had an argument with their wife or even daughter or possible son, as long as they're wired like their wife or their daughter, is if one side is arguing feelings and the other side is arguing numbers, it doesn't really work. And I think that's where the disconnect is. You're hard pressed to get your statistics and numbers absorbed by the people that feel a certain way. And good luck getting the people who have the data statistically to feel like you feel when they're looking at numbers that don't reflect the way you feel. So that's the cutoff, or that's the disconnect. So the question is who might fill the void in the middle between the feelings and the statistics and or the numbers? And I think there's some room there. I think there's I think that is the crowd that is going to have to come together. If you're on one side of the aisle, if you're Larry Elder, black conservative talk show host who's been on this show once or twice, you're going to throw a whole bunch of numbers out, and those numbers are going to defeat the feelings person, except for it's not going to work. And then if you're Al Sharpton, you're going to talk about the boot being on the throat of the black man since 1619, and his message is not going to work on Larry Elder. So maybe, just like in government, maybe the time is right for a third independent party, maybe an independent, maybe a racially independent group that kind of can get somewhere in between. Yes, Gina.
Yeah, I was thinking along the same lines when Pete had this thought of, you get somebody in, I would say in the middle. I hope I'm not, misquoting what I think he's about, but somebody like a Van Jones or somebody who, was in like Safe Spaces documentary, but also I'm sure has feelings about African-American oppression through the United States, a referee of sorts to sort of disarm both sides and go, granted, yes, we hear you. Now that you've been acknowledged and validated, now hear this person. And someone literally has to be the conductor of the middle of this orchestra.
What are the referees wear?
Exactly what I was thinking.
And
black and
there
white.
You go.
And that man is Quincy Jones. Check your ego at the door. Because if you can get people to enjoy Michael Jackson and Huey Lewis on the same song, then you are a uniter, my
and
friend.
And Dan Aykroyd.
And Dan Aykroyd. Then you, my friend, are a uniter. Yeah, it's going to be, I think that middle, I think that would be nice if there was a burgeoning middle who came about. I don't know. We're not gonna get anywhere with all cops are killers, and we're not gonna get anywhere shouting statistics and numbers. Also, somebody tweeted me the other day, like, and it's something we need. There's two things I think we need to stop doing. One, as I said, when people go, I disagree with everything so-and-so says. Like, one of the Duplass brothers has to say something nice about Ben Shapiro, but he has to preface it with, I disagree with everything he says. Like, no, you don't. You agree with 93% of what he says, and then there's 7% that you disagree with. So stop saying I disagree with everything the person says. None of us feel that way. Everyone loves pizza. People love this country. We love sports. We love our family. Like, we're all about 80% the same. It's the 20% we're arguing about, not the 80. So starting off with, I disagree with everything that comes out of fill in the blank's mouth, you're doomed for failure. How is it that you could start a dialogue with someone where you proactively announce you disagree with everything that comes out of their mouth? All right, number one. Number two, this notion, and somebody tweeted me, they were like, oh, okay, white male, like with your opinions, like convenient you have an opinion about the black community or whatever. And I'm like, first off, fuck stick. I have an opinion about everything all the time. That's how I work. I have opinions about chihuahuas. I'm not a chihuahua owner.
Right.
I don't happen to like them. I formed an opinion on chihuahuas. I've formed an opinion on food I've never tasted. I form an opinion on everything. That's what I do. It would be racist if I withheld opinions about the black community or Al Sharpton. That would be something that I've never done about anyone. I have opinions about men and women and gay and straight and black and white, this country, other countries, some good, some bad. I have a different opinion about every automotive manufacturer. I think of all of them differently. I cannot weigh in. You drive an Infiniti. How can you talk about Lexus? Well, easily. Right. I have opinions. Go ahead.
It's a pretty shallow argument we see a lot on Twitter, which is you've never blank. So how on earth can you have an opinion on blank? Like, I've never been to space. Can I still share my thoughts on Apollo 13? I think that's a great movie.
Yes.
Sit down, Earthling.
Yes. I'm sorry. Pete, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So what do you do in Sacramento?
I own a small machine shop.
Ooh, machine shop.
I work in my garage. I make all kinds of stuff out of metal. Sorry, I'm not an abuser, though. Abuser.
Oh, yeah. No, I
know
just
your opinion of metal workers.
I was having a thought about metal workers. I've always thought of them as some of the worst people on the planet, the people who work at machine shops.
Some of the worst.
I did have this thought. I thought almost every guy who I've come across who does real welding, who like welds for a living, has a huge mountain man beard. Most welder fabricator guys have beards and big beards. And
wouldn't that be the last profession you want the beard for? Right?
Flammable, and it's attached to your face, and sparks are always flying. And I started thinking about it, and I thought, The only higher percentage beard group were the Hasidic Jews, who are constantly kindling the Sabbath candles. You know, you got fucking candles everywhere and a huge beard. You got sparks flying everywhere and a huge beard. These are the two gigs you shouldn't have a beard for, but yet across the board, big beards. But Pete, you don't sound like the bearded variety of metal workers, are you?
Closely trimmed beard.
But still a beard.
Little beard.
Yeah, beard, but very neatly trimmed.
Yeah, there's one guy at the other shop who has a beard out of all the guys that make films and do the editings and stuff like that. And it's Sean, the guy who does the welding. And it's well kept, but it's still there. But a lot of the big biker beard dudes you see on TV and stuff from all those car shows, I don't know. It just seems like a bad combo. Hey, Mike.
You know who else you could throw in there?
Sorry, who?
The Amish, a lot of stuff done by candlelight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Mennonites are like, we have a good relationship with candles, so we're just going to lose the mustache. Let's compromise.
That's right.
We're sort of into fire safety. We're into upper lip fire safety. All right. Hey, people laugh, but Dan Haggerty, famously, Grizzly Adams, man, was at a birthday party for himself and went full Michael Jackson in a Pepsi commercial. He had that big mountain man beard and he was blowing out his candles. Speaking of, hey, thanks, Pete. I appreciate it. Speaking of blowing the candles, I as you know, I'm not a germaphobe, but the kid's birthday party was last night and Mama was rolling out the big apple tart and the brownie. I mean, at what point could you guys imagine a birthday party where you had two different desserts? Because the one kid liked this and then one like that. But anyway,
only if it was cake and ice cream. That's as far as it goes.
Cake with frosting.
She was putting the candles in the thing, and I was like, are we really going to do this ritual where the kids spit all over the cake? Like in the middle of this pandemic, like. They carried it out. They're blowing it out. They came over and tag teamed like one of them. They both hit one side of it. And I thought, all right. Again, I'm not uptight, but Natalia is. Her mom is.
Broken.
I've been getting lectured to by the two spittle queens over here for the last 3 months about how it's weaponized and aerosolized and all. And everyone needs to put a mask. Now we're just all blowing on everyone's cake and whacking it up. Okay.
Old habits die hard.
It feels inconsistent to me. All right. Ooh, Frank from Houston wants to thank me for coming out there. By the way, I'm coming out to Zany's in Nashville this weekend. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. We'll do a couple of live pods and a couple of stand-up shows. Frank from Houston.
Ace, man.
What's going on, man?
Ace, thank you so much for the shows in Houston. And Gina, I missed you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I'm sure they were excellent, though.
there are.
Oh, they're great. It's great to see Teresa again. And, yeah. and Crenshaw was great. God, he's got good timing.
Yeah, that guy was funny. He was funny on stage. I agree.
Yes, he sure was.
Yeah, we went out afterward and had a beer, and he took his eye patch off, and he had his crazy glass eye with like 14 karat leaf gold of like the Marine insignia, and it was right across this thin table from me, and I kept looking at this thing capturing the light.
He does the glass eye and the eye patch?
Yeah, I asked him, and I felt, because I had a dream about it, and the dream was, wait a minute. Is he wearing an eye patch over what is simply, you know, one of those plastic change purses from the 70s? Like, is there just a hole there? Like, is there a thing? And he said, so I asked him about it up on stage, and he said, no, he puts the glass eye in and then puts the patch on, which I get. It's a signature. It's a look. Also, the glass eye is a little, you end up. It steals focus a little bit.
Not to disrespect the great Dan Crenshaw. I like the guy, but is that a little bit the right version of the rock and roll, you know, guy with the, you know, not literally rock and roll, like, you know, Danny Bonaduce with the wristbands and the everything. And it's like, it's a look, right? This is theater. I don't know. That feels weird to me. The eye and the patch.
Well, he could go
Roy Orbison, but he has no effect.
Well, if you go out without the eye, then if the patch comes off, it's going to look pretty weird. Like if you, I don't know, washing your face in the bathroom or something. If the patch ever, whatever it is, it'll be a little off-putting. But if you go out with just the eye and out without the patch, that's a little bit off-putting too, but I think the patch is like a signature. I think that's his thing. I think that's what, that's how he got onto SNL.
True.
That's right.
Sorry, Frank.
So wanted to say thanks, and also came and saw you guys in October out in Santa Monica when Bald was doing his warm-up tour.
Oh, sweet. Thanks for coming, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah, my daughter's the USC law student. She met you and Christy afterwards.
Yeah, but you're both there. She was there with you.
Yeah, absolutely. What? She's out there going to school. She's in an apartment all alone. Her roommate's from like Fresno, so she went home. So during this lockdown, she's there all alone. Thanks for bringing normalcy. You don't come to Houston much, so I had to come out and see you all four shows.
Well, you saw all four goddamn shows. I'm trying to think.
Yep.
Well, they're all different.
I'm the bald guy with the goatee. I took a picture with you and Crenshaw right at the end. Ask me about Larry Miller. I haven't seen him and heard from him in a while.
I believe Larry's doing well, and thanks, and I'm glad all four shows must have been very different, so you're probably fine with that, I'm guessing.
Oh, no, absolutely they were different. Sure were.
Thanks, Frank, and we'll hope to see you at the next show.
Yeah, next time you come out. I actually went out to Austin when you were supposed to race a couple of years ago. Brought my chamois, but you never brought the car, so anyway.
Well, hopefully I'll get out to Circuit of the Americas soon enough. They were having a vintage race there. At some point, I was going to get out there, and then I couldn't. They're rescheduling the Trans Am race. I think I was telling you guys, I can't remember, that they canceled at the beginning of May. They're putting it on the beginning of December at Laguna Seca. That's the professional race, so we have to see if we can re-sponsor me in the car and do all that. And the and the vintage, they're going to decide as we speak whether it's going on or not. So we'll hopefully get that going as well. Let me do one more call up here with Mike on line three. Mike, Omaha.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on?
Not too much. It's kind of hard to follow up that guy's call, seeing four shows of yours in one weekend.
I know.
What a fan.
Yeah.
You have to forgive me. My voice is a little hoarse. I lost it recently just from sinuses and stuff. Anyway,
I think I might have coined Mike.
Yeah, screaming at the man.
What's that?
You should have said you lost it protesting.
That's what it is. Yep. I got to get my crap. Let's start over. I got it protesting.
There you go.
No, so recently I think I may have coined a phrase, but who knows? It may exist. And the phrase is action boner.
Ask
and I'm not sure if anybody's experienced this. All of you probably have. Basically, it's a scene in a movie that's so awesome and action-packed that it almost makes you tumescent. And I'll give you an example.
Does that happen?
Of course.
Yeah. Paul Bryan, you can get your nerd drop ready. For me, it was in the last Avengers movie when Captain America got Thor's hammer and, like, beat up on Thanos for a little bit. That is an action boner-inducing scene.
That could have just been straightaway gay boner. You know, Thor with his shirt off and everything.
Kind of sounds like it, right?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Now, this is...
Well, Adam, wait, time out. What's funny about that is in that movie he's talking about, the last one, Thor.
Yeah,
he's fat. Right. Thor became like 100 pounds.
So he likes a bear. That's okay.
Yeah. everyone's a bottom to Thor. I know it's been said many times, but there are no tops with Thor. So here's how I'm wired, and you guys tell me how you're wired. I love an action sequence, but if it's so incredibly fantastical and sort of takes place in another universe, I'm less bonerized by it because I look at it as a lot of sort of done on the computer versus kind of executed, you know? So if I take a look at the beginning, hey, if you look at the beginning of like Saving Private Ryan, for me, it's actually happened. So I have half a boner because it's historically it's happened. And then also there's some CGI in there, but there's a lot of just straight away Higgins landing craft, water and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And Fast and Furious, as insane as that shit is, it's a ton of stunt drivers doing a bunch of crazy shit. When it gets into total CGI Spider-Man land, I have less of a boner, but I'll
you like the gonzo thoughts. Amateur action.
Yes, that thing.
Or even like Mad Max Fury Road is a great example of just practical effects, and you're like, holy shit, someone did that. Someone hung off the side of that car, and there's flames all around, and that's crazy.
The beginning, if you Max Zapata, Hooper, there's a car chase scene in Hooper. There was a scene in Hooper. Hooper's a like Hal Needham stuntman film, like 70s. Burt Reynolds is the old stuntman, and what's his name is the young stuntman. Jan Michael Vincent is the young stud, and everything is just done analog. And there's this thing at that movie where they have to like drive through a town, and they like blow up a smokestack, like an old brick, you know, 20-story high smokestack, and they have to make it under the smokestack before the thing falls. And it's all just done with drivers and a guy blowing the smokestack. And at some point, they come to a bridge that's broken, and they just fire themselves a rocket car off this bridge. I'll show it to you. Sorry. Oh, Mac.
That just ain't enough. It better be.
Jan Michael Vincent and Burt, the height of their powers.
Wow.
We'll show you the smokestack. Just blowing guys off motorcycles and... Where's that smokestack?
Right into a hospital.
I don't think the unions were real strong back then either. There's the smokestack. I think you just went past the smokestack, Max Beta. Trucks catching on fire and tankers blowing up and
tanker
blows through the thing. They would just blow up everything, but here comes the smokestack, I think. All right. Well, you find the smokestack, Max Pat. I think it's coming up. It happens pretty fast, obviously, but there's a smokestack. All right. There it is. They blew up a smokestack.
And timber.
Under a real motherfucking brick smokestack. They didn't build that. That's just some place out of Pennsylvania where they went, yeah, go ahead and destroy it.
And they didn't ghost ride the whip there? There was somebody in that car?
I don't know if
that smokestack by about half a second.
I don't know if folks ghost rid the whip back then, but that's a good question. But show us that smokestack one more time. It's a fun movie. It's a Burt Reynolds fun movie. It's got a lot of humor and some titties in it and stuff like that. But that is fun analog 70s action back there. There it is. Smokestack's falling.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Hal Needham, man. The late, great Hal Needham. Mike. Oh, did I put him on hold?
He got an action boner. Had to go.
Mike.
Relieve himself.
I did get an action boner. Yep.
Yeah. You ever seen Hooper?
No, that was before my time, but I'll give you another example from a movie you do like. The Rock, when they're doing the car chase down, Castro Street or whatever.
Yeah.
That scene's amazing.
Yeah, that's a fun scene as well. The only thing that bumps me on those kinds of scenes is at a certain point when they're going to destroy the Ferrari 355, when they're going to destroy it and the trolley like mashes into it. When they do, you see like the fiberglass body kind of pop off of what is a replica of a Ferrari because they're not really going to bust up a real Ferrari 355. So they do like a replica with wheels and it kind of rolls it. But when they get crunched, it's like catching a fish with no guts in it. You know what I mean? Like it looks like it on the outside, but the inside doesn't. And, you know, it doesn't bump most, but it rubbed this podcaster the wrong way. Hey, thanks, Mike.
I kind of noticed that, too.
You did notice that?
Yeah, I did.
What's going on in Omaha these days?
In Omaha, hang on just a second.
He's going to go check.
Excuse me, I'm really sorry about my voice. Omaha is great. We actually didn't really get locked down. The big thing is you can't go to, like, Starbucks, which I like to do sometimes to work. And you can't really... Until recently, you couldn't really hang out at restaurants. They just recently opened it back up, and it's kind of the same, but it's also different. At least things are moving in the right direction.
Thanks, Mike. I had the ultimate. You know how we always sort of laugh about that thing that people do, which is they say, you know, you're meeting somebody at the airport, and you go, you call them, and you go, "Hey, man, where are you? You're late," and they go, "Oh, I'm just getting off the freeway. It's Sepulveda. I'm just getting off the freeway." And then you go, "Okay," but then you don't see him for half an hour, and it's like, wait a minute. You're just getting into your car in Van Nuys. Yeah. You're not just getting, and it's a math that you can't really lie about because if you're just getting off the freeway, then I will see you in a second. You know,
turns out you can lie about it quite often.
Ron White, the comedian, has a great joke about that. About how his wife's always lying and doing that when they're in the car together. And she said, you know, we're at the bridge, you know, State Line Bridge or whatever. We'll be there in 10 minutes. And he goes, "No, we're not. And we wouldn't be there if we were at the place you just lied about."
Right. I had the ultimate one yesterday. I told the kids I was going to pick up some like Mediterranean style food for their party that I was going to go to work and pick it up and bring it over. We have a little saying around the Corolla house called all buy, all fly, which means I'll pay for all the fucking food and pick it up as well. But I said, I'll just pick it up on the way back from work. And it's in Glendale. And Matt like phoned it in and we had it timed to pick up at 7:30. So I timed it all out and I walked into the restaurant at 7:30 and I was like standing there behind the little quarantined area or whatever. And I was like, my name and blah, blah, blah. And the guy went, "Oh yeah, yeah. They're just wrapping it up right now. They're just boxing it up.
Oh, great.
Up." And I was like,
another 60 seconds.
Okay. And then I stood there for 20 minutes. Now
it's not their fault for being late. It's their fault for telling me three times. And then someone would come around like 10 minutes later and they go, can I help you? And I'd go, I'm waiting on a takeout. And they go, oh, okay, let me check. And then they'd go to the back and then they'd come out and they go, they're just boxing it up. And I go, I know they're not just boxing it up. Something is not happening here. But it was kind of the ultimate, because when you're in the car, you can, I don't know, talk about traffic or whatever, but when you're physically just standing there in front of the kitchen and they keep saying they're boxing it up, and then at some point it went from boxing it up to they're cooking it, but it's just one more minute, and then they're boxing it up. And I did that thing that makes me hate Los Angeles that even more than I already do, which is I have such a paranoia of parking tickets in Los Angeles, but I was like, it's a pandemic. I'm just going to run in and grab this stuff. I don't know what to do with the meter. The meter needs an ATM card or a credit card or something. It's not the 75 cents. It's the dealing with the modern meter. And I'm just going to park by this meter and I'm just going to run in and grab my food and run back out. But of course, standing there for 20 minutes was getting me a little paranoid. Hey, let me tell you about Tushy. Show of hands, do you have a butthole? Well, if you do, then this ad is for you. For years, bidets have been available, but expensive. And I'll tell you, man, once you go the Tushy route, you never go back, man. You can cleanse the butt in a precise stream of fresh water for just $79. That's right, under $100. Attaches to your existing toilet. No electricity or extra plumbing. So anyone can do it on any toilet. Cuts the toilet paper use by 80%. And I got to tell you, man, once you get used to this, you'll never go back. Hands-free, baby. Every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and 12-month warranty. So if we've learned one thing about this whole hoarding and pandemic and all that kind of stuff is we don't want to get caught with our pants down and no toilet paper. Let's go with Tushy. Join the millions of happy Hello Tushy customers now and get a clean butt with every wash. Right, Dawson?
Go to HelloTushy.com/Adam to get 10% off. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy.com/Adam for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/Adam.
All right. Brad Williams is going to join us. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with the great Brad Williams right after this.